Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Tired of your old tractor crying when it sees a hill? Or coughing more than Uncle Earl in pollen season? Trade up now at Sid's Trading Company. Coyote and TYM tractors so mean, they'd plow a cornfield in reverse. Uphill. Get her did at Sid's. SidsTrading.com.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Garden Mama Show. It is my great pleasure and always a privilege to be here. You know, if you're lucky enough to get a microphone, most people want to hang on to it for a while. So I'm going to let you know that, yes, I am downsizing from a house that's too big for one person, and I am relocating a little bit of my world, and I'm very happy to tell you that Super Talk is kind enough to let me take them with me. So we're going to be busy for the next few weeks doing a little bit of shifting and moving. And I'd have to tell you, I should have written that book. Move every 10 years, even if it's only across the street. Otherwise, everybody leaves all their stuff in your attic, and you don't know what it is.
The attic's always the Achilles in a move.
Oh, my goodness.
From my experience in real estate.
This is where you need one of those hatches. You know, you can just open it up, and it all would fall out somewhere.
There was an easy way when you built a house.
Doesn't
to just be able to pop the roof off and airlift
just
it all
momentarily,
out.
Right? Just let it all out of there. Yeah,
that'd be great.
Well, we do understand about having that one spot where you can hook the axe in case your house floods and you have to get out through the roof. We get all of that. But the good news is that even those things, and yeah, I know we're 20 years since Katrina. I have to say that. I have to say that out loud. We know that's all happening this particular time of year. And it's difficult to recover from change. But on the other hand, if you embrace the change, at least you can sleep at night. So that's what I think. Change is inevitable, let's face it.
It's constant, isn't it?
Yep. Lucky for us, the sun comes up and then the moon rises at night, and those things even change where they are. You have to watch them as they go around the sky.
Well, and you know, if you live in Mississippi, then you get almost every season within a few months.
In like 3 days.
You see the change right there in front of you.
Some days it's quicker than others.
That's right.
That's why today is World Juggling Day, because everybody needs to be able to juggle. But I can't. I'm bad.
I'm pretty decent at juggling.
I'm really bad at it.
Baseballs or like apples, something that size.
Oranges,
yeah, I can do that. That was something I learned as a freshman at Auburn.
And how to pass time.
Okay, this is how you do that. And we had a couple guys that actually could. Yeah, pitchers, obviously. We had a lot more time on our hands. So
they do think a lot of themselves.
That cinder block wall in the back of the dugout, they would bounce them off of that and catch them and do threes and fours. I can never do that. I could do three easily, you know, just normal juggling. But
well,
I can't do the
circus. You know, there's always a need for it. So if you find you need another career, at least you have the basics.
It's a good skill.
I cannot walk on my hands, and I cannot juggle. But I'm really good at clown makeup, so there is a possibility if something should need to be done, I could help out with that. Today is Rosé Day. Okay, bartender, I don't even know what rosé is. Help me out. Is it a
pink wine?
Is it a grape? Is it a name for a thing? Is it a blend? What is it?
Rosé.
I've never understood
that's
this.
A great question. I never really dug into deeply.
Okay, then I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I liked it. It was a delicious, light,
it's
summery
light. It's
wine.
It's very summery, very light,
and
yeah.
You could use it to spice up other things with it. As far as mixing cocktails, you could use rosé for a lot. And also make a very good frozen drink with rosé. Just take you like some lemons and limes and squeeze them in a bowl. Get a bunch of ice and crush it up if you don't have an ice maker that makes little crushy ice stuff,
I was just looking at a thing that makes that.
Yeah, just wrap it up wrap it up in like a big towel and beat it up and pour you some strawberry.
Don't y'all want video of this? I want to see him do
make
this.
Crushed, oh, I used to make crushed ice all the time when I was bartending. People were like, hey, can you make a mint julep? Well, I don't have crushed ice, but I can make it. So you just make That's it wild. By hand. But then you just make you a frozen drink using rosé and some fresh lemon and
or
lime.
If you
and
have one of
strawberry.
Those machines, you can make a grown-up slushie.
You can do it grown-up yeah, style. That's
I understand.
Right.
I understand.
Or you can stop at a gas station nowadays and you know, get you a bottle of rosé and an aisle over here and then go get one of those frozen drinks and you got one when you get to the car.
You may have started a trend. We'll just have to
they
wait
They had that
and
figured
see.
Out in Oxford, I think, yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. One of the things that you will be seeing on the supertalk.tv feed today, I hope you're paying attention to that stream because there's some good stuff there. Particularly today, the tiger lilies are blooming at my place. And I really, really love that flower. Yes, I know it's a bully. And even if you put it with your other lilies, it's always going to be taller and bigger and knock them out of the way kind of a thing. But if it's I have these in a big container and they don't, you know, they don't fight with anybody except each other. And they're just really lovely. I'm happy that there are ways to contain things that are a little bit more enthusiastic. On the other hand, the calla lilies that I didn't think were still alive are in bloom. They're beautiful. And also the crinums that I know we transplanted those just last year, and I don't know if they should be blooming yet or not, but they are, and they're quite lovely. It's a nice white lily with just a little bit of a pink cast to it. It's not actually I don't know the name of the variety, but it's a fairly common one, fairly simple one. Really pretty thing. So what's going on at your place? Send us a text. Give us a call. You have lots of ways to get in touch with the program. I have been intrigued by a couple of questions that folks have given me this week. I want to talk about milkweed. I want to talk about the fact that, yes, monarch butterflies are some of the most beautiful things in the world. And June is National Pollinator Month, so we think about all of these things. How are we going to get more monarchs? How are we going to get more things pollinated? How is all this going to work? And milkweed is a large helper for that. There are a couple of things you need to know, though. One is that the Mexican Asclepias, Mexican milkweed, is a nice annual plant, and in some parts of the folks who listen to us, it will become perennial or it will actually reseed and just start itself up again. There also, though, are several native varieties. Depending on where you are, there's four or five. And I've even heard six, but I don't know where to get the sixth one, so I'm not going to argue with those folks. But at any rate, there are multiple versions of the milkweed that are wonderful garden plants and very beneficial for pollinators. You know, pollinators are really looking for what all the rest of us are looking for. They're looking for something to drink. They're looking for some food. They're looking for a place to have a relatively safe life. And in our case, that means not poisoning the plants that they're going to try to eat or live in, and also making the plants available that they prefer. That is to say, the host plants, for example, the milkweed for monarch butterflies. So I think the understanding how these things work together can make a big difference for you. You also need to understand when you want to encourage pollinator plants that you're looking at something at ankle high, something at knee high, something a little taller than you maybe, as places where the pollinators are going to be flitting around and looking for things to get a little bit of nectar, to move a little pollen around for you. So give them as many opportunities as you possibly can. Our probably biggest pest of milkweed and any number of other pollinator plants are aphids. So here's the thing. If you're looking, for example, for a monarch egg on a milkweed plant, you're going to look on the back of the leaf and you'll see individual eggs there, okay? But if you see a cluster of also, which are golden, you're going to see a cluster of yellow on top of the leaf, though, look closely. Those are going to have legs and they're aphids. Now, this is where you have to make that decision, okay? The aphids are going to tear the plant up and not give you the benefit of a chrysalis and a future monarch butterfly, or whatever the pollinator happens to be. So give yourself the opportunity to blast those off with some water without disturbing the eggs, of course, or any chrysalises that may have already formed. But this is where we do not use insecticides, even the organic formulations, because it's too close to the life that we're trying to nurture. So if you see that group of aphids, pinch them out of there, wash them off of there. I found, you know, just anything, rags, you can get them off with anything. They're not very well attached. So give yourself that opportunity and make it a more pollinator-friendly garden. Let's see what's going on over here. I love when y'all ask me for my insight. I always have an idea. Sometimes I have an insight on transplanting roses between now and December. Ah, Chad in the Hub City. Hey, Chad, how's things going in Hattiesburg this morning? You know, rose moving, I just had to answer this question for myself the other day. Rose moving is not best done in the summer. But if you must do it, then go ahead and give yourself the opportunity to move the plant, prepare the new site, and dig the plant up, prune it back by half, and get it moved, and make sure that you're watering it adequately to keep it from going into transplant shock. And if it's going to be able to recover and grow, you'll see new leaves in a few weeks. It's a tough choice, though, at this time of year. I'm about to make it, so I understand what you're talking about. There are a lot of times when things have to change, and we change them. So, Bill's in Perkinston. We have a large group of boxwoods and a bad case of boxwood blight. Uh-oh. We're considering replacing them with large monkey grass, the imperial. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know the other name of it. Or maybe Mexican petunia. Will the blight negatively affect those? No, it will not. They're in Poplarville.
I have a phone call from Faye, but the phone system has been kind of crazy. So I'm trying to figure out how to use it. So see if Faye is on with us right now.
Faye, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your patience. What's on your mind?
Yes, well, I need for you to unconfuse me.
Uh-oh.
I spoke with you about 2 weeks ago about shallots.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm confused about, I've never grown shallots before, but I went out the other day, and I see them all the time, but it's like, okay, they've got like each shallot that I put in the ground, each bulb, has like, I'm going to say, anywhere from 4 to 6, like, green onion tops.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, I'm going to pull one of these, because I have a lot of them, and see what's on the bottom. So when I pulled them, they actually looked like little tiny green onions, you know, about the size of a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to have, if one bulb has 6 of those little green onion looking plants, is that going to be 6 shallots?
You probably won't. You'll probably get 3 or 4. Because as they grow, they do kind of fuse themselves together, and they also have a longer growing season than some of our other onions. So that's part of my experience has been. But I will tell you this: okay. I've been known to get bored waiting for them and just pull some up out of the ground and eat them, and it turned out that then apparently I didn't get the whole bulb because they sprouted again. So don't be afraid of using them.
I use these. Because the ones I pulled up had 6 little, you know, shallots, or
friends.
They look like little baby green onions you're pulling out the ground.
They have their little
friends. So I use them just as green onions, mm-hmm. and I loved them.
The taste is really different,
isn't it? Because the green part of it is probably, a foot, 14, 16 inches long. Of course, the rain is just, you know, almost beat them to the ground.
You're right.
And so, I kept thinking, okay, are these going to fuse themselves together and just make one big shallot like you buy in the grocery store? You have unconfused me about these shallots.
And what I think also is that when they're grown for harvest as seed shallots, they probably are mm-hmm. thinned and spread out a whole lot, you know, so that each one can get bigger. That's the only other difference would be.
Okay.
We don't, you know, it's okay, but we don't need that.
So
we're really just looking
for
the flavor.
Will I wait to pull them in the early fall, like real green onions?
Yes.
I mean, like onions or shallots?
They should make by the fall, yeah.
Okay, all right. I appreciate your time.
But you know me, I'm going to take one every month just to see what it looks like.
Oh, yeah, I am. That's what I'm doing.
Because I'm so curious, you know.
I can't let them just sit out there until October. And then that's the only thing the deers won't eat. You know, I wish they'd eat those instead of all my hostas and my, you know, my Asiatic lilies, and, you know, eat those.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to plant a whole bed of spearmint and mint and just whatever I can find that's a mint in the mint family, and hope they're not going to eat that.
They'll have a little bit less interest. Artemisia is another good group. They don't like those gray leaves. So there's
I've got some big pots of that, and they hadn't even touched it, and they got to come right by it. So, all right, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Good to hear from you today. Yeah, the things that the deer turn their noses up at are not very many, but we do appreciate that there are a few, and they are not well, I mean, not everybody likes mint. Not everybody wants that mint julep we were just talking about. Not everybody's interested in those tastes because they are very distinct. And certainly the deer don't.
What is your theory on the clapping the mint to open it up? Or is there any real science behind that? Or do you just muddle it and get all the good stuff out?
I'm more likely to...
they say bruises it.
Well, I was going to say I'm more likely to just bruise it by crushing it. But it is quite dramatic.
Yeah, no.
To see people, a bartender make the muddle, you know, smash, and then do all that. I mean, it's fun. It's show. It's
it theater. Is. Well,
if I was doing it here on television, I would certainly do that.
We made a really good mint syrup, and
How's that blueberry syrup?
Yeah, well, I mean, I need to get to work. Come over to your house and do that. That's where all the goodies are.
I'm serious, though. There's another. Ten. Quartz.
I would rather just come over this week and do it there.
Oh, fun, dude.
It'd take me 20 minutes.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, instead of transporting and moving. But mint's the same way. Just get a lot of fresh mint.
Yeah.
Get it warm in a little sugary water. You can do a 1-to-1 or whatever you're looking at. And mix it in and get it as spearminty or minty as you want. And you can get it to about taste like the white Wrigley's gum if you want to. And then you got a bottle of that stuff, and your mint is now preserved for a much longer period of time.
Yeah, that's true.
Then you will see.
And there's more uses for it.
Yes, you can do a lot with it. But it was always good. You can put it over ice cream or something like that. Mm-hmm. It adds a little sweetener to it. But, so you don't really believe in the clapping is the only way.
No, there's other ways. There's other ways. Now, on the other hand, not everybody, like, I happen to own a marble rolling pin, which is heavy enough to crush and bruise anything like that. So that's if I had to do a whole bunch of it. In fact, I was just thinking about doing something with, I have so much oregano. I have a big oregano plant, and it's also, its companion that wasn't supposed to grow so fast has grown equally fast because we've had so much water, but it still tastes good. It's a nice, strong oregano. It's a spicy one. So I'm thinking about putting those two together and making an oil that then just use for any number of things, but it's another case where you've really got to get that flavor out. And so, rolling pin or the slapping or the drama of the whole business of clapping your hands with the mint in between it. And then, of course, you make everybody at the bar smell it, you know. So, I mean, it's a real dramatic thing and fun. And by the way, if you have a bartender that will do these things for you or a restaurant cook, make sure that you tip well. It's important. They're not there just for you, but they'll be there for you for a moment. All right, now, we got to get out of here, but we'll be right back.
Lord, you know what? Everybody tell me that somebody done hoodoo the hoodoo man. I buzzed your bell this morning, little girl, you had your elevator running slow. Buzz your bell, little girl, I want you to take me up on the
home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish, then there is Superior.
Are the trees and shrubs running your yard instead of you? Let the tree professionals at Barone's Tree Pros take out your problem limb by limb. Barone's Tree Pros is your complete tree, shrub, and stump removal service. No job is too big for the tree professionals at Barone's Tree Pros. And with our superior cleanup, you can't go wrong. Barone's Tree Pros, 601-345-8090. 601-345-8090. That's 601-345-8090. Or online at baronestreepros.com. That's baronestreepros.com.
Are you having trouble?
For nearly 31 years, Tico's Steakhouse has been a staple of fine dining in Jackson, Mississippi. Dad has long since desired for me to come work alongside him. And now that I'm here, I would like to invite you to come experience our family tradition of our hospitality, sizzling steaks, and healthy pour beverages. Our dining rooms are open and we are taking reservations. Our private rooms are also available along with takeout. Call today or stop in to experience Tico's in the second generation.
Tico's Steakhouse, East County Lime Road in Ridgeland, 601-956-1030.
You mind your own business.
Mind my own business? What's that supposed to mean?
No, I was just thinking about all of the news of tax changes, insurance changes, regulations that are being passed down to business owners. I don't have the time to keep growing and to keep up with changing payroll regulations.
I know. It seems like all I do is handle employee-related problems.
You know, I hear PeopleLease can help.
How can they help?
PeopleLease can handle our payroll, taxes, employee benefits, and workers' compensation. They even offer an affordable and customizable 401k program and a 24/7 online human resources support center for all my HR needs.
Think of all the time we'll save letting PeopleLease handle our payroll and benefits administration. I'll be busy growing my business and letting PeopleLease take care of the rest.
It sounds like a good business plan with PeopleLease.
Let PeopleLease mind your business so you can mind your own business. Call now, 601-987-3025. That's 601-987-3025. Or visit freepayrollquotes.com for your free quote.
Hey, this is Bob. Just walked into ESI Supply. Patrick, man, what's going on with the hard hats?
ANSI has a new rating out, the new Type 2 hard hats, to be able to get on some job sites. And so ESI is really your hard hat headquarters.
From head protection to fall protection to cut protection to fire protection to eye protection, ESI Supply is your protection headquarters. Stop by and see them at 111 Aerosmith Drive in Richland or give them a call at 601-933-4910. That's 601-933-4910 or online at esisupply.net.
Good morning, Crowley. Somebody asked me yesterday if where do people listen to my show from? I said, well, the good news is with the stream, you can listen to me on your way to the International Space Station if you want to. I mean, but yeah, there's some folks in Crowley. There's some folks in Crowley. Things you may not know about true radio, terrestrial radio. Once we speak it, it goes into the outer reaches of the universe, and I'm still speaking in 1995. Out there somewhere.
That's right. And you know, you saw at
it's very exciting if you think about it.
The bakery with the coolest T-shirt ever had yes. The alien holding my two favorite things, a croissant and a cup of
and
coffee.
And a cup of coffee at
and
once.
And he was getting beamed down.
Exactly.
People Perfect. Are hearing you everywhere.
Yes. And that's the joy. That's also the responsibility.
You got to love it.
You know.
Well, and there's another big thing happening today.
Yes.
And I think about it anytime. LSU has a big game, especially with somebody like Arkansas, the marquee game tonight. But, you know, this is the old Buck Owens song, Tiger by the Tail.
Tiger by the Tail.
I was still singing that as I was running back up. I was like, I got to remind Nellie that her Tigers are going to be playing the Hogs tonight. It's going to be a big one.
It's a big deal. Yeah. It's a big deal. There's a conversation going on the text line. Jeremy and I are talking about cabbage worms. So if you're interested in that. But you handpick the worms themselves. This is where I paid my children a nickel apiece at times to pluck them off into a jar with a little bit of alcohol in it, so you can get them out of your garden.
Well, I ate cabbage in a fried form called an egg roll yesterday. For
uh-huh.
them, two of them actually
uh-huh.
They were delicious.
There was at least some green in there,
there
somewhere.
Was, yeah,
yeah
that was good.
That's funny. We were talking with some folks about. There's always that list of. The foods that if you grow them yourself, great, and do so as sustainably as possible. But on the other hand, if you buy things, you need to know which ones have the most likelihood of having a whole bunch of pesticides in them. And I finally was glad to see somebody say they always put leafy greens in there. But when they put cabbage in, You're supposed to take the outer leaves of the cabbage off because they're not exactly the most tender things. And a lot of people don't like the way they taste either because they're a little harsher. But that's also where the pesticide residue would be. So that's one of the things. I love flat Dutch cabbage, and I might grow another one sometime. But it's really a lot to grow because you only want, how many cabbages do you, if you're not at the, going to the market? But when you go to the market, even that one, you should still take a couple of leaves off of the outside of it to be sure you're not getting any residues that you didn't intend to get. So it's, yeah, you can wash it, but you can't wash every cabbage leaf in a head. Come on. Yesterday was the 13th, and so today we are looking at 13 petaled flowers on the you didn't even know that, did you?
I finally brought
something you didn't know about. There always are questions about why things have particular numbers, and a whole lot of things arrange themselves in particular ways. But the 13, the joy of the 13 for little girls is that if it's a 13 petal flower, it's always going to come out, he loves me or she loves me or whatever, boy or girl playing the game. But it's always going to come out that way. And if you think about it, any month that begins with Sunday the 1st, like June just did, is going to have a 13 because the 13th day is going to be 13 days from Sunday, which is a Friday. These are the things they don't teach you in math class. It's real simple math. It's like it takes just as much energy to sustain 20 plants as it does 30, so go ahead and buy 50. Just go ahead, and that's today's lesson.
I love it.
They're so big. Come on. I mean,
go big.
I have said this for years, and it is absolutely true. I have learned early on from a grower friend of mine to grow a few more than you think you need of whatever it is, because there can always be something that happens. And so I call that insurance gardening. In case I'm a dummy and leave this one out in the full sun, I've got one over here, so that won't happen. And sometimes it's that simple. Sometimes things get attacked by bugs, but sometimes they just get left aside by human beings. So I would be one of those human beings for sure.
Is there a trick to aloe? When I went by the farmer's market, it was a couple months ago. It's growing very well. I mean, it seems to continue. I got the three little bitty ones. They were kind of giveaways, and they are really strong. I use it all the time. But is there a way to, I guess my question to you is how do I sustain the growth of it? How do I, if I'm cutting the long frond and using the gel, how do I?
Burn yourself a lot, huh?
Well, no, I mean, it's just good skin lotion.
It's very good skin lotion.
Get you a little derma roller and that stuff.
That's true.
Boy, it'll light you up. It feels so good.
It sounds great. I have no idea.
Really good, like on your face and stuff. I've read a lot about it, and I've started using a little bit just to test it, but I want to make sure I always have aloe. Mm-hmm. I got the three plants, and they probably have 7 to 10 of the nice little reaching for the stars, 6-8 inches.
Whatever you're doing is right, because if they went from little bitty to that many leaves, you're not overwatering them, which is frankly the main thing that we do. We put too much water in that root zone and the whole thing. You know how they'll get suddenly they get kind of fallen over, they flop a little bit? That's because they're too wet.
They get soft.
And frankly, direct sun is not their friend either.
No, I've kept them fairly shaded, with indirect sun in an area where they will get good normal rain, the outdoors, but I've I don't have them in direct, and they're not going to get hammered by rain, but I have been conscientious to ensure that they're not sitting in water.
Most of the varieties, the Barbadensis and all those things that we grow, most of those are native to the South African part, to South Africa, which has every growing zone that there is, and there is an aloe that grows in every one of those zones. It's just crazy. It's a very diverse family. But if we overwater them, if we pay too much attention to them, we can even over fertilize them and cause them to grow so fast that they flop. Last thing that you want.
My mammal, they look like agave.
When they're more crowded and they stand straight up, and there's some, of course, sometimes, of course, a plant will defy everything that you know about it. It will do something else, and that's fun. But to keep them going, the main thing is just to not overwater them. And when you fertilize a little bit, and then wait another couple of weeks and fertilize a little bit more. You want them to stay a good, strong green.
Is there a specific fertilizer?
No. They can really take just about anything. They're going to need a little bit of all of it. So this is the one where you have the a bottle of something liquid and you mix it in water.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I got that stuff.
It's fine.
Well, number two question. I received, must have been 2 years ago, some nice bulbs from some lilies. And I planted them. The ground was a little hard where I first started. Mm-hmm. I conditioned it. It mm-hmm. was in a kind of a shady but really nice little corner of the yard as you're coming in on the driveway. And so there's other plants that have thrived there. But it took a couple years. I finally now have about a foot and a half, 2 foot tall spire with at least four beautiful opening as we speak, mm-hmm, orange mm-hmm. with some reddish color in them. And I've been waiting
they
for 2
dots.
Years.
They have dots or stripes?
I think they're stripes.
Okay.
But man, they are so, I've waited for 2 years for these
they
things.
They finally did
yes.
it.
Yes. I don't know what it is about this year, but the iris did the same thing. I had so many more. And then this year, finally, those bulbs popped
I'm
up.
I'm going with deep watering okay. that we have had. It's not the, and the other thing, people say this and people go, uh-huh. It is true that the water that falls out of the sky is different than the water that comes out of your tap that you water the plants with. Even if you have good well water and that kind of stuff, I'm not saying it doesn't work effectively, but it does not release the ozone. It does not penetrate in the same way that a good hard rainstorm does, and it doesn't water the entire area, which helps with the humidity around everything. So there's just something about that level of rain that is a disaster for some folks. I mean, we're seeing some tomato blight. Ooh-wee. But we're also seeing some beautiful flowers and lots of them. Looking right now, supertalk.tv, we're checking out Carl shrimp plant. And that's one of my favorites. I think it's so pretty. I'm really happy to have that one. That's fun. I have a couple more things I want to talk about the boxwoods. We were talking about Bill's boxwoods. Bill and Lisa are in Poplarville, and they have a big bunch of boxwoods, and they have boxwood blight. And he's wondering if when he replants, will those plants be susceptible to that blight? Probably not. And the reason for that is because the root rot that affects boxwood is a very sincere shrub disease. It's not necessarily going to affect the perennials that they're intending to replace those shrubs with. I will say this, though. I have one caveat. Anytime you take out the plants that have been diseased, I want you to cultivate that soil a little bit before you replant. But I also want you to drench it with fungicide just so we can slow down any return of fungi that might, because you're going to leave roots, you're going to leave bits of the plant. There's always, you know, it's not possible to create a new sterile environment, and you wouldn't want to. So the best thing to do is going to be to let that get a little bit of time between you and the replanting that includes working the area up, but also drenching it with some fungicide. That will help. I think that's a smart one. I really love, this is so adorable. Y'all are so sweet. My goodness. This is Greg and Kathy and Vaughn. This is how cool plants are and how cool people are that grow plants. This is sweet. My mother-in-law's daisy, they're gorgeous, by the way, beautiful Shasta daisies. From Memphis to Brandon, Mississippi in the late 90s to Jackson in 2018 and now in Vaughan, same clump. Dig it up, take it with you. Dig it up, take it with you. See, you're inspiring me because I have a clump of Becky daisies that either needs to be divided or dug up or something, so I'm going to do that in my changes. And closing with one of my very favorite quotes, oh, the places you will go. That's so sweet. The people you will see. We can go on Mulberry Street. We can go all the way through.
That's an adventure.
I have way too much Dr. Seuss in my memory banks.
Wrong with that. Nothing wrong with Dr. Seuss. That's some great wisdom in those words.
There really is. There's a lot to be thankful for, too, that somebody could actually write all that. You know, when I talk about somebody writing something or painting something, and even a photograph, if it's a good one, we think about the fact that you had to think about that first. This was brought to me by a really very clever art history professor at one point, the Rodin sculpture, The Thinker. How long do you think Rodin had to think about that, you know, was the question. And that's true, that you have to see it in that block of stone before you can carve the person out of it. And those of us who don't see like that, we have to be able to see the flower that's going to come from that seed. We have to be able to understand how that tree is going to grow to plant it. I mean, there's just so many things you have to be able to see. and so many things that you just can't possibly see. But sometimes you have to, you know, you have to see some of it. Oh, here we go. Here comes the squash. Here comes the squash. That's beautiful. Lovely, lovely, lovely. So much fun. That's always fun. My tomatoes need a life jacket. I swear it's true, and I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. It's been so wet. I have one tomato that has grown so fast and so, I mean, just ridiculously tall that it now has flowers at about 8 feet off the ground. It's not that big a tomato. It just has done that. And it shouldn't even be blooming again because it's already made fruit, but I can't explain it.
He's feeling good about himself.
Feeling very good. Yeah. Feeling very good.
Feeling jumpy.
Woo-wee. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly how you do that stuff. You know, how you talk to the tomato plant and say, just slow down a moment. We have to, you can't possibly keep your,
because there's
no
more, all day.
No more cage. The cage is down here and the plant's out there. You know, it's, you see the people in the next house looking at you. The neighbors are going, what did she do to that? I didn't do anything.
Just talk real nice to it.
Talk real nice. That's right.
Play at the Balfa Brothers on a regular basis.
I think that doesn't ever hurt. Do you know that much about Madagascar?
The movie or the island?
Well, the movie's adorable, but the island is even more interesting.
Yeah, it's a really interesting place.
I've heard this expression my whole life, since Madagascar drifted away from India. I have a feeling it wasn't quite a drift. I don't know. There must have been something, some big event that caused this to separate. But it has created, of course, in the island of Madagascar, a really rare environment. And everything has evolved there in ways that only work there, or that work there. They may not work somewhere else, or they might, but they do work there. And so it's a very selective place. There are, however, the leaders of the word today, and it is Indozoicory. Isn't that a wonderful word?
Yeah, it sounds like it has like layers of
meaning. I love all those syllables. Well, speaking of layers, you would say it. It has to do with the way plants are propagated. And it has to do with who eats them and who poops them. And in the case of three lizards, now, come on now, the whole thing rests on these three lizards for reforestation. It's the ecological role of three seed-dispersing lizards. Kyoto University has been studying this. It's been 88 million years since Madagascar drifted away from India, isolated it from everything else, and of course the flora and fauna evolved in seclusion. What didn't get eaten completely grew to be bigger the next time, and this is how it gets there. There's the lizards persist in degraded environments where the larger ones can't get to, so they have a very serious role in reforesting these areas when they're torn up by storms or torn up by anything else. Pretty interesting stuff. Okay. You can call me crazy if you want to. I take that as a compliment. We'll be right back.
I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
The best made to order.
Yeah.
my alter ego in Acadia.
It seriously is.
Another life I lived there, you know.
Really great fiddle playing. I love that.
Nathan Abshire.
Chank-a-chank stuff. Nathan Abshire and the whole gang of them.
Yeah, there
are. It's a sound that you can't change it in your head. Once it's there, there. And it's one to call on. I don't know if other people do that. I hear people occasionally make reference to listening to their earworm, listening to the song in their head, you know. And sometimes I find that very comforting. Because it helps to tune out other stuff.
It's like reading a good book when you get zoned in.
Right.
You know, you don't hear anything else.
That's
a good feeling. That's peace and freedom.
It's certainly better than thinking about needle ants. That's the other thing in my email box this week, y'all. Everybody wants to know if I know about the needle ants. Yes, I do, and I really hope we don't end up, because they're everywhere. I mean, there's 27 or 26 states or something, including, of course, Mississippi and Tennessee and Alabama. And Arkansas, too, I think, all of whom have had needle ant sightings. And I think probably they're everywhere else, but people haven't looked for them, so otherwise they would see them. Really good question. This is interesting. Can lightning cause soil to be sterilized in a circle? The answer is that doesn't happen. Lightning strikes actually have a nutritional impact on soils. They break the nitrogen bonds. It's actually called atmospheric soil nitrification, because it comes out of the atmosphere and goes into the soil, and it has to do directly with the lightning's effect. So no, it doesn't do that particular thing.
We got Miss Mabel on.
Hey Mabel, how you doing, darling? What's going on today?
I'm doing good, and you?
Pretty good.
But my garden not doing too good.
Too much water.
My squash. I got three or four squash out of my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got there, and something just killed my vine.
Mm.
I guess you would call it vine. Uh-huh.
Some of them do vine. I'll tell you what, I've got neighbors just like you that hadn't been able to get a single squash yet, and their tomatoes are blighted too. Mm-hmm. So you're actually ahead of the crowd. If you're getting three squash off of there before something eats it, you're doing pretty good. And this particular year, it's been such a crazy rainy time.
Well, can you replant them?
Sure. Wait until the first part of July. Wait till
the
first part of July and plant you some more seeds. That's the best part about being here, is that we get to start over. Everything that didn't work, we get to do again.
But now my tomatoes, there's a lot of tomatoes, but I don't know how to save them, preserve them or whatever.
Are you trying to make
my
sauce
tomatoes?
Or? Are you trying to make sauce or what?
Whatever I can do
Yeah. That's another one. I'm glad you do, because I don't. I got like six tomatoes on three plants. That's all I managed to make this time. Well, here's the deal. Everybody's got a recipe for tomato sauce, and mine is not very good. Mine is basically you take the skins off and cook the tomatoes. But there's somebody, I can guarantee you, there's somebody in your circle that makes tomato sauce every year. And if any of y'all out there want to send me a recipe, send it to mamaonair@yahoo.com, and I'll get it to Mabel next week, okay? But just start cooking them. That's really all I can tell you, is just start cooking them. Sounds like a really wonderful problem.
Well, I never could get no okra to grow.
Well, the real good news, we can keep planting that one too. It's squash and okra. We can start over again.
Would I put them in the ground or in a pot?
Yeah, start them in the ground just in a couple of weeks in July.
And that's
squash, really, and to tell you the truth, summer okra to me is always a better bet. It's easier to grow, and because it loves that heat, like I don't. It loves the heat, and it can grow better. So, and the squash does really well in the summer garden.
Okay.
Now,
I don't want to hold you too long.
No problem.
But my pepper.
Mm-hmm.
I got my pepper, they've been real good. I got jalapeno pepper.
Oh, fun.
And cayenne pepper.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how to preserve it. Sometimes I picked it, and it got in the house and it's beginning to slither up or dry up or whatever.
Yeah, they will dry.
But I don't know how to... So what else can I do with
those
it?
You can keep those in the refrigerator for about a week, and that'll keep them fresh. And then after that, if you chop them up, and I'll saute mine. And sometimes am I going to admit this? I am. I'll put them in the microwave and just cook them a little bit, and then freeze them, and have it forever. I mean, that's what I did with some peppers last summer, and I really think it went till Christmas. I had I had just enough pepper to put in stuff.
Oh, you put them in the microwave.
Yeah, that's what I do. Now, other people would just say blanch those peppers and freeze them. But I think I was in a hurry or something, and I just decided to try it, and it wasn't too bad. Wasn't too bad. Made them a little tough, but it wasn't too bad. I was patient with myself.
Okay, well, find out for me when those tomatoes.
We'll see if we can't get you. We'll get you a recipe. Thank you, Mabel. It's wonderful to hear from you today. Hope you have a good weekend. Let's see what else is going on. Oh, my goodness. The time is flying this morning. That's fun. Yeah, so the needle ant business, y'all, you're going to hear about it. Everybody from the BBC to your local television station is going to do a fix because they're so hideous looking. And that's why everybody wants to go, ah! And they're pretty scary. But they're not any – the anaphylaxis is a terrible possibility. And they are best avoided. No question about that. No question about that. Whew, goodness gracious. Today is definitely a day to throw caution to the wind, Lance. You ready?
I'm born
Just
ready.
Just get out and express yourself. Just be yourself all day long.
Yeah.
This is National Knit in Public Day.
Okay. My mama would have loved
that. I mean, my mother would say, can I crochet? And it would have been all right. Yeah. But I think that's so funny that we have to have a day that is for people. It's okay. You don't have to be embarrassed that you knit. It's all right. Now that we've seen guys on the sidelines reading books, will it be long before they're sitting on the sidelines knitting a sweater? You know,
making something for the new baby.
Exactly, doing something.
Making some socks.
Why not?
Wife's got make two matching socks there.
You see if you can do that. See if they'll come out the same.
Put a little string on it so you can tie them together.
Oh gosh.
My mama would have loved that.
I found all that stuff. I found all that. So much stuff. My goodness. Yeah, but National Knit in Public Day is just one of the, and actually it's international.
Oh, international.
So no matter where you are, take out your knitting needles and get busy with the yarn. I don't know why we feel like we have to celebrate that, but somebody put it on the calendar, and I guess that's good.
Well, I grew up with it. My mama, she made afghans and quilts. People came from all over the country to get them. So I had a whole room in the back devoted when nobody was there. And, she would hang them and you'd have the whole room. And I never really understood how the process worked, but there were the hooks in the ceiling and you'd go in there in this beautiful 10-foot by 8-foot quilt or, afghan or what. I mean, we still have this stuff. It's amazing how well made and long things last.
Yeah, it's true. They certainly can.
She was peculiar about it. She did not like an error, man.
They taught certain young ladies like me that we had to do, we had to learn all these various crafts. Mm-hmm. And some of them stuck, your grandma.
She loved them. People loved them, too. And, I look back on that and I'm so thankful I got to see it.
Yeah.
Because it's an art form.
It's another case. She saw it in her head and she was able to put it into the world. It's a wonderful thing.
She would crochet anything.
I mean, we got a lot to talk about coming up in the next hour. And I want to remind you right now that today is the Finder and Bottle Tree Garden Tour. So if you're going, let me know where you're at. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back.
We are the people, Mississippians. We are the land, growing food, fiber, and timber. We are there when you need us, from the roof over your head to the food on your table. We are small town, but big moments, your next door neighbors. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
The doctor's office that acts...
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal on Super Talk Mississippi.
Thank you, David. Appreciate that. Good morning, everybody. Welcome in. This is the Garden Mama Show, and it is the middle, smack dab in the middle of the month of June. What could be better than that? Oh, my goodness.
It hadn't been that hot yet either, which is nice.
Pleasant breezes are keeping us interested. We haven't retreated entirely yet.
Rain has been pretty epic, but...
In a minute, it will be otherwise, but... I don't know. You know, I'm serious. The weather forecast is might rain, might not. Yeah, depends on where you are, what time it is.
Pretty much a 4 or 5 day outlook, but it could rain.
Could rain. Makes it tough to do your weather segments, I bet.
Well,
it changes every few hours.
Once I lock it in, it's locked and it's playing.
That's what it's going to say.
Yeah, that's what we're dealing with.
Good question from our friend Corinne. Could you please talk about what I need to do with my long blackberry vine shoots now that they have finished bearing? I'm so jealous. I love to hear that things have just finished and you've picked them all, especially when the blueberries are still overwhelming me at my place. I need to know how to prune. I need to know to prune. I know I need to prune, excuse me, but how much to cut back and where is the question. Okay, here's the deal. The way that we manage blackberries in the long run is to cut out the older canes each year to the ground that do not make fruit that year, because that gives room for the new canes to come up. You don't do this the first 3 or 4 years of the plant because it's establishing itself. But there does come a point where it's obvious that some canes have stopped making, and those are the ones that you take out completely. The rest of it, all you're doing is keeping it from dragging the ground, basically. If you have some that are really wimpy, you probably take those out entirely because they weren't fruiting anyway and they're not going to get thicker. You're looking for nice, strong canes to emerge from the ground to give you some more fruit. So that's really, you can do it now. You can do it in 2 or 3 days. You know, it's a perfect time to do it. But I wouldn't wait a month. I would not wait to do that. The reason is because the blackberries are going to grow as soon as you start pruning on them. And you want them to do that because you're trying to get them to get nice and thick and have plenty of berries next year. But if you wait until July, they may not get to finish that process. So go ahead and give them the pruning that they need right after you finish picking them, and then you can appreciate and enjoy them for a lot longer in terms of their life. If you don't do this rejuvenation at least every other year, you end up with a lot of canes in a very messy middle. Even without thorns, it's still messy to try to take apart. So take the older canes out each year. Okay, after they're about 3 or 4 years old. Oh, fun. There's folks picking at let me see, let me get this right. I want to say in Vaughan. Yes, in Vaughan. Folks picking the blueberries. Beautiful hedges, by the way. Those are some gorgeous ones. And I'm happy to see that the folks are in long pants, long sleeves, and have on hats. Some of that is about keeping the bugs away from you, but some of it is that you can really get a much bigger sunburn than you intended standing out there picking those things. So good for you. Beautiful picture, too. How do we spend our time? Here's how we spend our time. Something else that we do to spend our time, and we probably should spend more time thinking about it before we just leap out and do it, is the construction of new garden beds. I have been talking to somebody who's putting in a raised bed and a landline bed all at the same time, and the difference is not that huge, except that, as we were talking with Andrew last week, if you're going to make that bed a raised bed, go ahead and raise it, make it so that you have enough soil in it to grow what you want to grow. It might be 8 inches deep, might be 10 inches deep. In some cases, it might be more than that. But when you have a decision to make about where to put a bed, I'm telling you to look, stand at the back of your house. I didn't invent this, by the way. Stand at the back of your house and look outside. Where's the sun? Where's the place you'd like to see a view? Where were you hoping that something had happened that didn't happen? All of these are excellent places to put in a new garden bed, and you probably ought to. You want to make sure that it doesn't have water standing, and this is a good year to determine that. If it's still squishy and wet 3 or 4 days after it has rained in your place, that area might be a little bit too wet for anything other than a raised bed. But if there are other problems with that site, you can certainly do it or move over a few feet. You may find a better place for this area. Organic matter improves the soil structure, so that's why we add it to soils. But we add it to clay soils as well as to sandy ones. Clay soils don't drain, but they have a lot of minerals in them. Sandy soils drain too well. They have great drainage, but they need the minerals. So that's why we use the addition of organic matters to modify the conditions and improve either one of those situations. Sometimes you ask somebody what to put in. Should I put in this or should I put in that? And they'll say some of all of that. And that's because what we have found as gardeners is that if we're adding organic matters, different sources really do work better so that we have different particle sizes in this new mix that we're making. Till the organic matters in, whether it's leaf mold, peat moss maybe, core maybe. Those are pretty expensive. But you also can use composted manures easily enough, your own compost, some a few fresh leaves, not many, some leaf mold, something that's been sitting around for a couple of months. All of those things are excellent. Certainly gin trash can work if it's been composted well, wood shavings if they've been composted well. Till all that in, along with a slow-released fertilizer, and if you like a compost starter, you might work that in there too, or some microorganisms, maybe just some worm casting fertilizer at this point would be an excellent choice, because then you're giving the soil all it needs. We're feeding the soil so that then we can feed the plants, and it just makes a lot of sense. It's something that works well. When you get it all done, rake it all up, make it, you know, You may want to check your pH. You may just want to add a little lime to be sure it's got the right thing for it, unless you're growing blueberries, and give yourself the opportunity to rake it into a nice mound or fill the bed, depending on which way you're doing that, and step back and congratulate yourself, because not everybody goes to this trouble, and trust me, it will last a lot longer if you do. You won't be messing with it too much. You'll be growing, and I think that's important. You've got a phone call.
We have Mr. Mike and Peddle with a bluebird question. Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Good morning.
There we go.
I have a question concerning bluebirds. How many times do they raise a year?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. Ken Hackman is driving in his car somewhere, and he's cursing me that I don't know the answer to this. I would think it's only once, because you always hear about people waiting for that clutch of eggs, and I don't hear about that more than once, but I don't know. Somebody will tell us here
well,
in a minute. Tell me what happened.
The reason I'm asking is that we have a box, and the bluebirds nested, and they raised their young and all. As a matter of fact, bluebirds are the hardest working birds I know. They will feed those little ones from barely able to see daylight until it's almost dark. I mean, all day long. Those two bluebirds are...
Children are so demanding.
My friends at the
Eastern Bluebird Society, who I do not know, and they are not actually my friends, but they do know what they're talking about. 2 to 3 broods or clutches are expected in warmer climates. So that's you've got your story. They're really busy, in other words.
Okay. All right. The reason I was asking that, later this summer, a pair of bluebirds, I have two boxes, by the way. Actually, I got three boxes up in the backyard. But anyway, I had in the one box that they didn't raise in, they built another nest, and they raised, was it a clutch? Is it what you called it? And they raised again in that box. I mean, the feeding process and the nest building feeding process, the whole thing. And so I was just wondering if it was an old pair that did it, or if it was a pair from the new brood that made the nest in the box and raised again.
Well, I don't want to say how bluebirds act, but birds tend to be very territorial. So if they've taken possession of two of your houses, it's probably the same pair, simply because they're not likely to enjoy the company of another set of bluebirds in their neighborhood. I think that they tend to be very singular.
Okay. Well, I was not sure about that. I was wondering, and just thought I'd call and give you a call.
Well, Eastern Bluebird Society folks I do trust. I have paid attention to them for a long time about different other things. I had a friend who photographed bluebirds just extensively on the Natchez Trace, and that was one of the references that he used. So that's why I looked them up when you said that to me. Honestly, I'm tickled to know that, because I think the more bluebirds, the better. Myself. Hardest-working birds.
They're just such a pleasure to watch.
That's great.
I just wanted to check with you.
Well, thanks for letting me know.
I do appreciate the information.
Sure. Thank you much. You know, that's an interesting – it's one of those things. You may not – it's like the Dewey Decimal System, okay? You may not know everything in the library, but you might know how to look it up. In my world, too, I used to love the Dewey Decimal System. I'm not going to put that down, but – In terms of the internet, if you have a few things that you can hook your hat to that you know you appreciate, those will oftentimes lead you to the one that you're looking for. In the case of the bluebird people, that was true. Pretty interesting. Well, anyway, my goodness, the blueberries. It's really a good blueberry here, y'all. It's big around as can be. And so many of them. Oh, my goodness. I have, not that we stay on alcohol all the time here, but I'm going to tell you that because all of the holiday days, today is the so-and-so day, there's always alcohol involved because, well, it's alcohol and it's people and it's curiosity. There's also always some sort of self-awareness thing. There's always, the impress yourself, knit out in public day, that kind of thing. But today is not only Rosé Day, it is also National Bourbon Day and National Gin Day, and that is not the card game. Now, these are not three things that I recognize should be blended. I get that. But I had to ask the question, which came first, the gin or the bourbon? And the answer is, because bourbon is a very specific type of whiskey, the gin's much older. But the whiskey's much older than that. But that's because it wasn't made with corn. You understand, bourbon is a corn mash, and that's how it gets its name here in the United States. That's how it got its name. We began doing it with corn, yes, in Kentucky, yes.
You can make alcohol out of a lot of stuff.
You can.
Taters and rice.
You absolutely can.
I'm rye grass.
I'm not going to turn down a flight of sake at the right opportunity.
Sake's pretty interesting. You know? It really is. It's like the... It's like moonshine from Japan.
Yeah.
And they just warm it up for you.
Off you go.
Here we go.
Plum.
Yeah, a little bitty, white drinking vessel.
Resist some of the flavors and go for plum.
Yeah, alcohol, that's a good point you're making, though. At what point did mankind figure out that you could pretty much make alcohol from just about any type of vegetable or plant? I mean, you can.
Well,
in
the case of gin, it's juniper berries.
Yeah. How did they figure that out?
And I always wonder those things. You know, who decided that you could put those olives in something and eat them 2 years later?
Yeah, bear over
how
there?
How did that happen?
They watched a bear for about a year, and he went straight to the juniper berry.
But who decided to go and make juniper, which is, of course, the thing that is infused into the botanicals that are infused into the distilled spirits? But This is the ancient one. This is a 13th century Flemish manuscript that first talks about doing this.
Yeah.
And I know people, actual human beings alive today, that go and forage in Scotland for those juniper berries because they say there's nothing like it. And they also like to travel, so that's probably a good reason.
Well, the guys at Wonderbird in Oxford, or outside of Oxford, it's in between Oxford and Taylor. Great, great group of guys, but they have the gin Wonderbird, and I had an opportunity to get to know them over the years, and a wonderful group. If you haven't been out to the distillery, it's a really cool place because you get to see basically, the process. It's not this huge, huge operation, at least it wasn't, but they make a great product, and to see all of the work that goes into getting a gin with the appropriate flavors and all that, but the baseline, how do you make the actual spirit to get it to the point where you can infuse and do all the things that make gin, But it's a fascinating process. I don't know how many people, you know, are aware that we do that. And they buy a lot of their rice, you know, the very specific grain in Mississippi.
Oh, yeah. So it's very specific. Yeah, and that's cool. How that's done. Well, and of course, whiskey, not bourbon whiskey, but whiskey is older than that. Whiskey comes from like monks in the 1000s AD. They were, I don't know, you got to do something with all that stuff. You've grown all
a lot of time, too.
Yes. So that's what they did. But I love that the term whiskey comes from the Gaelic, which I'm very bad at, but I do have a little bit of understanding about it. It's Ushaka Beata, and that directly comes from Aqua Vita, which is Latin. And it's a fun thing to understand that the monks decided that whiskey was the water of life.
Yeah, we need this stuff. It's good stuff. Let's go play some golf, too, while we're at it.
It's while we're at it.
Keep your water, Matt.
It'll disinfect things, you know. It'll make some of that meat last a lot longer if you marinate it. And there's a lot of uses for these distilled products
that are not necessarily all of those things. You got from eating that bone accidentally.
All of those things. It just makes a whole lot of sense. So, the gin, not the card game. We'll talk about the card game another day, but not today. People used to give away playing cards. And I'm waiting now for there to be where you can just give away a game, like you give a party favor to somebody, you would give them the deck of cards. This will be if I say the name, it'll be some name of some actual game because there's too many of them. But the Bozo birthday game, you know, suddenly be a thing.
Yeah, we were playing that yesterday.
That on your app, on your phone. That's how you get your gift because we don't play games in that way anymore. I love the notion of there are places, you know, just like there's anything else, it all comes and goes. But there are places, and some of them are actually in gardens, which is kind of cool itself, where people set up tables just like you would set up and play chess in the park. People set up and play board games. Or they do these things in public, play card games, because it's physical and you actually get to see people. I don't know if y'all realize this, but there's a whole world of people that are, say, under 20, and there's a whole world of people over 40, that it's their parents and grandparents who worry about the fact that they don't know how to do anything. They don't do stuff. You know what I say, take them into the garden, put the phone up, tell them they can get the phone back in an hour. They got to come help mama or grandmama or papa or the neighbor or whoever it is. And we're going to get outside and do some things. And that in turn engenders more curiosity, I think, in people, and they just keep doing stuff. So to me, that's, I don't know. You have to solve all those problems themselves. You have enough plants, but I don't have these plants. That's really beautiful. Thank you very, very much, Ken. And they are gorgeous. Ken's got calla lily and dahlias starting to show out. Lovely, lovely plants. He's right, though. Oh, my goodness. There's so many plants I don't have. Stick around. We got more to talk about here on the Garden Mama Show.
Where the sweet magnolia blossoms, garden fields were white as snow. Catfish John was a river hobo, lived and died by the river's bend.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
We've sent that Rip Van Winkle.
long. Things don't get better, I'll soon be long gone. This situation is driving me insane. Somebody fetch my coat and hat and hand me my walking cane.
Gotta put on my traveling shoes.
Oh, it's sad, but sometimes it's just gotta be done.
Hey, I played that for a reason. You've been wearing your traveling shoes lately.
Putting them back on this week, too. Running hither and thither. But I'm going to tell you about something else you might want to travel to. Coming up this Thursday, our friends at Verona are having the Pollinator Plants Program. Dr. Crofton Sloan will be speaking. If you don't know him, you'll be interested to go hear what he has to say. It's going to be how to select and grow and maintain the beautiful pollinator plants. But right after that, wear your walking shoes. Put on your traveling shoes because you'll also have time to tour the Magnolia Botanical Gardens there at the station. So you'll have a good time. It'll be fun. It's free. You don't have to register. Just go. And bring your hat and bring your traveling shoes. So there you have it. Appreciate them sending that around to us so everybody can know about it. There's been so much talk about this water and how much rain is there and how much more is there going to be. Just think back a few years when there was none and we were already heading in the middle of June into times that turned out to be dry all the way until September in many places. We are so fortunate. But it brings to mind how important it is for us to learn to conserve some water. And now, if you're going to catch water in buckets, you're going to catch water in tubs, you're going to catch water in fancy, frankly, beautiful, absolutely sculpted water barrels, rain barrels. Remember that we also have an awful lot of pests like mosquitoes that can cause us big problems. You're going to need to determine your decision. It's how to do it. But you're going to have mosquitoes if you have water collected. Sometimes even if you don't, sometimes if it just stays too wet in different places. But if you're collecting water for reuse, which I hope you are, you have to remember that we're going to have way too many mosquitoes. So you can use dunks. You can use there's probably 10 different sorts of home preparations for removing the problem of mosquitoes. People give you bleach recipes. People give you all sorts of things to toss in there. Just be sure you do it so that you're not. It's like taking care of the fleas on your animals or in your yard. If you don't do it, it only gets worse. So if you're not seeing to those mosquitoes, the situation is not going to get better. It's actually going to be more of a problem for you later than it is right now, and you don't need that. We have a competitor for the Mediterranean diet as being the way to go. You know, a few years ago, they said if you just do that, you'll have longer life and less pain and all these other things. But at the same time, there were a bunch of studies about flavonoids or flavonoids, however you want to pronounce it. And those foods are like my world, you know, tea and berries and dark chocolate. Even apples, that's another of my favorite things. Those are all very high in flavonoids. And what we're learning now from a study that is a coalition of groups from Queen's University, Belfast, Edith Cowan University in Perth, Australia, and the Medical University of Vienna, as well as Universität Wien, which is also is in Germany. The study tracked 120,000 people for more than a decade. You know how much trouble that is to get all these people to pay attention and respond to stuff? Because, you know, if you're going to survey them in this length of time over people's lives, they got to remember that they're part of this thing and do something about it. So that's the good news. It's not just the quantity, but the diversity of flavonoids that offers the biggest health benefits. So this is not them saying any of this. The researchers had nothing to do with this. I say, add more blueberries and blackberries to your Mediterranean diet, and we're on the way. And don't forget the dark chocolate.
Especially a croissant with dark chocolate.
Oh, it was so good. The whole rest of it was good, too. It was wonderful. Our friends over there just knocking it out of the park. It's so much fun.
Insanity of awesomeness. I mean, it's basically, if you want to break your camera taking pictures of the most cool pastries and chocolates,
go over to Just
Vanilla. Yeah. Your camera's going to blow up on you when it.
And no, we don't get paid for this.
No,
they
it's
don't
just
even
that
pay
good.
For our croissants. We like them that much.
We're not gonna,
they have no idea who we even are. We just like
show
them.
Show up and eat up.
Exactly.
They look at us like, okay, they're back.
Here they are again.
Here they are.
Who'd they bring with them this time? Yeah. You know, so that's, and that's really the way it should be in a local place that you like to patronize. You should tell people you like it so they'll go too. I think that's fun. But
don't eat all of our croissants.
No, leave me at least one. Dark chocolate's good though.
Yeah, it's
that's
good
all
stuff.
Right. There's a whole bunch of studies out this week, and the summation seems to be that we don't know why cats purr, but we're glad they do. Seems to be the giveaway of all of this. Again, Kyoto University, I keep thinking it's going to be Max Planck, but actually they studied something else for us. They're not studying the purrs. There's a lot we don't know about these feline friends, and of course they intend it to stay that way. But cats will be quite social. Some can live in groups, and others are absolutely not interested. Now, some like people more than they like cats. You know, there's a lot of variousness, and that's why they're working on it, why they're trying to ask you about the comfort presence, what it is that is comforting to you about having the cat. More people said purring than anything else. Just the simple sound of this creature, you know, I don't know, opening up their diaphragm. I don't even know what they're doing when they do that, but it just makes a wonderful set of sounds.
It's kind of like a Tim Allen constant, like, but they just keep
it
going.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Like, but yeah. Why not study that? You know, everybody is interested. Everyone wants to know how come they do this and what more can they do. But I will give you Max Planck. I've got a whole bunch of garden stuff and a whole bunch of other stuff. But when I tell you about gardening and talk about growing edibles, about the second thing I say after be sure you have enough sun to grow what it is you're trying to grow is grow what you like to eat, okay? If you don't like squash, then leave that for somebody else. On the other hand, if all you really care about are tomatoes, you can just grow tomatoes. That's okay too. But the hunger switch, it turns out, is in your nose. And our friends at Max Planck have let us find out about this. They're studying how the smell of food triggers brain cells so that you feel less hungry. This goes to that study that was out last year that said if people sat with the cooking of the food, you would think it would increase their appetite, but it actually made them feel more satisfied and they ate less because it wasn't just walk in, smell the food, eat. It was walk in, sit down, smell the food cooking. And then when the food was served, you were already partially satiated by having the smells in you. And now the Max Planck folks are letting us know that they've got a direct link between that smell of food and the feeling of fullness or the feeling of having already eaten something. It's interesting. It's a part of this. It helps that you eat less, whether you're an animal or a human, because you feel a little bit satiated before. But intriguingly, creatures that are already obese don't have this instinct. So they don't know if it's something that you lose or if it's something that you didn't have, which is why you overate all that time. And that's part of what they're going to study next, of course. The finding could let us know a little bit about how we think about things and also about how we address obesity. If we're looking at overeating as something that is, you know, a moral failing, then we're really not looking at it in the right way. But we also have to realize that it's very difficult to change habits. So even if you are making the changes, maybe you got to reteach your nose to smell the food and be a little bit more comfortable with it. I don't know. I have long thought that cooking food is helpful to, I mean, I'm not a small person. If you've never met me, trust me, I'm overweight for whoever's actuarial table it is. Always have been. But I'm in decent condition. I can, you know, move around. I've been a fairly decent person my whole life. And I got to tell you, I don't eat as much if I cook the food. If I have to sit in the restaurant and wait for it to get to me, and particularly if it's in a different room, and so if you can't smell the food cooking, I have actually seen this in my own life. If I simmer that for a while, then I'll probably only eat about half of it. You know, I think that's true. It's just an observation. Lance doesn't see that. Lance sees it. He wants to have it for lunch, whatever. That's, you know, I realize that. But you probably actually have had you have had so many rides and so many vehicles so full of food smells that maybe it works.
Yeah. I mean, you're not the nose is what gets you.
You're not obese.
No. The nose. I've always, mentally, to me, you know, the thing that really resounds with my brain is a smell. I mean, that nostalgic feel or smell of something. And yeah, I mean, I can get a good whiff of something and tell myself I ate it.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
I really can't. I can make my mind think I've already had that, and eventually the hunger may go away. But yeah, it's much better to enjoy eating it. You get all
exactly.
of it.
Exactly, you get all
the
of
smell
it.
Really does a lot for me.
You're right, you're right.
Same with flowers. I mean, it's you got that one smell, you get it, and then you're like, oh, I'm never forgetting that. A gardenia freshly opening. I can tell you that's one of the things that just sticks with me. And I know, and I love that smell. It's so floral and fragrant. You can't bring them inside because you may get the sneezes. But, man, that first little opening amazing.
And it doesn't necessarily last as long if you bring it inside. Outside, it's trying to attract pollinators. So there's a little bit more dynamism in that flower.
But boy, it's such a unique smell right out of it. Same with wisteria. Right when it does purple or whatever the color is start opening up, and you get that, it's almost the most, like you walk into Bed Bath and Beyond, but it's just your yard.
Just your yard.
Yeah, like, wow, this is awesome.
It's already filled up.
And you can smell it as you open the door, and you know what time of year it is. And the smell is
I'm waiting with Pollinator Month happening. I'm waiting for the song. You know, there's always got to be a new song that comes out. And I think that the LSU folks who are doing they do a grow guide every week. Just about every university extension system does that sort of stuff. This particular one someone sent to me. Pollinators include bees and butterflies, but also a variety of insects that we would consider to be less than desirable, like moths and wasps and flies and beetles. And she wrote, doesn't that sound like a song from somebody like Raffi or some, you know, some kid's song that then you would hear in your head? It goes back to the earworm. You got to make sure that you're taking care of all these pollinators, and here's the list, you know, head, shoulders, knees, and toes, that kind of thing, except it's going to be bugs. I don't know if, As we have become more aware of these things and certainly made more noise about them, I don't know if there's more. We're not seeing censuses this year that tell us there's too many fewer. That's how we got in this position, was suddenly there were so many fewer bees and bugs and various and sundry things. But it's another case where if we don't keep up with it, we won't know if we're winning or losing. Now, obviously, you'll know in your own yard. You'll either see the pollinators there or you won't. But in the case of the broader picture, how do we measure those things? How do you measure them? I like to see a waft, you know, a big space full of lantana that's just covered up in little tiny skipper butterflies. They're always there in the middle of the summer. I love that. That's so pretty. But I don't know. Are there more now? I don't know. I know there's the monarch counts go on because that's one of the most prized critters. And yes, those counts were up this year, so that's good. In terms of who was going to migrate, we'll have to wait till the end of the season to see how many of them made it. We will find out.
Yeah, I know we're going to be missing one. Hawk figured out how to. I mean, he didn't want to hurt it. It was so funny watching him play with a butterfly, a bird dog, not wanting to hurt it in any way. But I think he made a friend. And then he accidentally stepped on it. And you're like, oh, man, he was so disappointed. But, yeah, I mean,
get back up again.
No, he was like, oh, what happened? What did I do? So, yeah, he's been learning about the butterflies. And they're out. I've already seen quite a few. And
there's a lot of hatching going on. And the swallowtail that was in the parsley at my place has hatched, and I'm happy about that. So, because the parsley just about got denuded. That it is that time. We talked last week about short and long day plants. Not that it's still only 24 hours, but it's the amount of that time that has sunlight. So when we're looking at parsley and dill and things like that, they grow best through the wintertime in the south because they are triggered to bloom by the arrival of these longer days in the summertime. And that's if you're planting it then, that's fine. But we can't really do that here. It ends up blooming too soon. So we have a different trigger point. We plant those in the fall. And that's really to the swallowtail's benefit as well as to ours. So you have to plant extra. Put up more stuff. We're now sun-drying fruit. I like that. It's true. If you lay it out, you will get dried fruit. I was looking at a machine that makes both ice cream and crushed drinks and stuff that's a home appliance. I thought, how could I possibly do it? Well, maybe. Right next to that was this home freeze dryer. And I thought, man, there's going to be people that want to do that. Oh, my goodness. But when you find soon things that freeze dry and others that don't, what do you do with it? I guess you can compost it. I don't know. Anyway, subjects for discussion. Tell me what else is on your mind. He's right. I'm getting corrected. That's okay. We'll be right back.
Propane uses for residential include cooking, heating, gas logs, outdoor products, water heaters, landscaping, and manufactured housing. Propane is a trusted, reliable source of energy that is used year-round by more than 60 million Americans. Visit mspropane.com to learn more. Energy for everyone. Propane. That's mspropane.com.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi.
Hurricane season in an incredibly over-constructed bass line in that song that goes together. But if you've never seen the movie, you should watch the movie, too. It's funny. Something about Mick Jagger. I don't know what that is.
He's a dude, isn't he?
Well, apparently a very successful one, yes.
He's something else. I always had a kick out of just reading about the Rolling Stones and watching, you know, the unlimited deep dives.
I was very young. As soon as we learned that he had come from the London School of Economics, we knew he was going to be okay. He was going to be able to figure out how to make something out of all that money. And he certainly has done that. I don't know. I'm a guitar fan. I'm a Keith Richards person. I think that there is certainly nobody like Mick Jagger. And I have seen him perform and appreciated every one of his antics, as good as I can say. I'm glad he's able to do what he's doing at 103 or whatever, however old he is now. Hey, now, I'm going to get serious for a second. The United States Army is celebrating its birthday today, and today is also Flag Day, of course, which is handy for this kind of celebration. I appreciate the folks that have served in the Army. I've known people that served in the Army all my life. I have appreciated so much the stories, the experiences, and the freedom that y'all have bought for us with your bodies. Appreciate you every day. Thank you. There's a lot of work to be done in this country, and the Army does a lot of it. 250 years. That's pretty cool. Now, I have a question for y'all. When did you first consider that there might be a way of controlling the pests in your garden besides racing out and spraying them with something that you weren't sure what it was that they gave you at the garden center? Okay? Most of y'all have figured out that there are other ways to do things. We always talk about the cultural controls first. First, you have to see the bug. You know, you have to identify the bug because it might not be a problem. Just like a weed is a plant growing where the gardener doesn't want it. It can be anything, but it's growing where you don't want it. It becomes a weed. Same thing is true of a pest. A pest is what you don't want in your plants, but it might not be. Some people would consider that swallowtail butterfly to be a pest if they're trying to grow parsley to sell at the market. So there's always a relative back and forth about it, and I think that that's where integrated pest management as a concept really does fit in. I'm going to talk more about integrated pest management as we go through the summer because there's always another bug that is giving us a problem. Part of integrated pest management, yes, does extend all the way to building that fence to keep the deer out. And in my case, if I were putting in a garden right now in an urban neighborhood with a lot of trees like I live in, I would be building a cage of chicken wire around my tomatoes, around the whole garden part, actually, with a top on it to keep the squirrels out, to keep the birds from getting my tomatoes and my blueberries. But it is it's something that we don't think of necessarily because integrative pest management is just such a difficult. I wish they would have found another term for it. Maybe I'm dreaming now because there's not another one. But there's so many things that you have to understand. There's a lot of different garden products. There are things that prevent the recurrence of a fungus, for example. There are things, and then they will at the same time suppress a little bit. But there's also ones that are specifically to dampen the effect that's going on and has no other effect at all. All right, so there's different kinds of these products, even when you're looking at beyond the point of whether they're naturally sourced or whether they're from the commercial entities, either choice of those things. We talk about predators. I have a friend that is in search of ladybugs. I have a lot of ladybugs. I think if I put them in a box, I can probably take them to her house. On the other hand, you can also buy ladybugs these days. And the thing you have to remember is that there will be more ladybugs in that box than will stay in your garden. But with proper placement and proper timing, you can definitely establish a colony of ladybugs from a box, a box full of them. Another thing that you might not know, or you might want to know, actually, I should say, is that there are some insecticides that are actually growth regulators and have only an impact on that particular critter. For example, the things that reduce the ability of white flies to grow wings. Well, if you're a white fly and you can't grow wings and you can't go, then you can't go. It prevents them from molting and growing into the next larger size, which then can be a pest. So those are the kinds of things that are a little bit different, but still need to be considered in any discussion of integrated pest management, because obviously the same reason we talk about growing companion plants together, because they help each other. One perhaps is a trap crop for an insect or another. You know, there's something about them like basil and tomatoes that they just are very complementary. But on the other hand, there are other ones where you would like to know that this plant's not going to increase that effect. So there's both ends of that particular one. If you can leave a wild area in your garden to encourage the beneficials to nest and rest and be there, they will be able to come out and help you with your other tasks if you are not in turn, as they say, spraying everything from the garden center into the garden. There are both very specific things like the growth regulators, but there's also the very wide-ranging control products. And some of that has to do with timing. If you are trying to get for instance, even the white flies, but certainly other things that will tend to be nested in one place at night, it's easier to control that. On the other hand, if you don't get to the aphids while they're still in their clusters on the top of that tomato plant, they're going to disperse and be all over everywhere before you know it. So there's different pieces to this project that are also that are things you do, there are things you use, and there are also many things to look out for. And all of that is integrated pest management. And I look forward to, I don't know, making us all a little bit smarter about it as the summer goes on. It's one of my favorite topics, as you know. If I had been as big of a nerd as I really was put out to be by everyone around me, I probably would have become an entomologist instead of a horticulturist. So, because I'm pretty fascinated by bugs. That's not exactly a claim to fame, I admit. I'll give you that one. Don't forget, as we are talking today about Pollinator Month, if you have the opportunity to plant some more plants, there's a whole bunch of annuals you can plant right now. There's an even whole larger bunch of stuff you can plant next month as we begin again both the planting of everything from, you know, zinnias and sunflowers to tomatoes and eventually next month broccoli. It's a wonderful chance for all of us to have that really multi-seasonal growing. And in fact, this is the best time for many things. A lot of people find that their butter beans do better in the summer. You know, there's just stuff that people appreciate and like to grow that do better in a hotter climate, such as Mabel's okra, for example. I don't think she'll have any trouble getting that to come along. I was looking at a container variety for okra that makes pods that are about 3 inches, I think, was the maximum on those. Then you cut them. Of course, you cut okra at any size you want, especially if you're trying to fit it into a jar to make pickles. You still got to get them to fit. But I like the idea that this one was going to make a large crop of short okra, because that is perfect for pickling. But it's also perfect for the other way of making fried okra, you know, where we just slice them in half and grill them up. Come on, I'm hungry. Let's get out of here. A lot going on next week. I will be in my traveling shoes. Mark Patrick will be here next Saturday. You might even hear from me on the large sounds. Come on now, it's the Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
We are agriculture, the number one industry in Mississippi. We are 180,000 member families strong, a century of generations. We are grassroots Mississippi in all 82 counties. We are Unified, the largest general farm organization in Mississippi. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish, then there is Superior Catfish.
Think for a moment about
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media Production.